afternoon, and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis and the late Patty Fink. Now, I couldn't decide, should I say Patty's not going to be with us today, or should I just keep saying the late Patty Fink until 2 minutes before the show and say, I guess she's very late today.
She's very late today.
She's very late today. Actually, Patty won't be with us. She's out of town for the weekend. She'll be back next week.
Don't even say she won't be with us today.
Right. The late Patty Fink won't be with us today.
Just say the late Patty Fink will rejoin us next week.
Because that's how late she's running.
That's how late she's running.
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
We got that. Our guest today is Peter Coyle. He's the... You know, after Leslie Jordan, I feel like saying he's the comedian librarian from the Audelia branch of the Dallas Public Library. And Peter flew in specially to be with us or drove over here, something like that.
Yeah, on his helicopter.
Something like that. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you.
Reason we had Peter is he is the national chair of the Stonewall Literary Awards, which is one of the book awards that's given by the American Library Association. Peter, how did you get stuck with that? I mean, how did you get elected to that job?
Well, it's actually a volunteer position. I applied to serve on some committees with the American Library Association, and I was selected to appear on to be on the committee as a member of the committee, and then I was asked to be chair this last year, and so I accepted and took on that task. Not knowing exactly how much work that would be, aside from being a member of the committee, it's a lot more work than one would think.
Now, I posted on Facebook that you read a million books this year, and some people accused me of exaggerating a little bit. But you read a lot of books.
Yeah, about 250 probably. I mean, I don't have an exact number, between 250 to 300.
Since last May, and you had to have them all done by...
November, December.
So 250 books... Laurent, how many books did you read in that period?
Probably about 3 or 4 or 5 children's books.
So you're a perfect one to ask Peter about some of the books he's read.
Yeah.
So you read about 250 books. Now, these were books that all have some gay or lesbian or transgender theme to them, right?
Yes, most of them did. I'd say probably 99% of them did. Mm-hmm. Varying from main characters who are GLBT or Q, from minor characters or secondary characters. Some had plot elements that had to do with that as well. Kind of a mixture.
Okay, so you read about 250 books, and you gave awards in how many categories?
We have three categories. The first is the Barbara Giddings Literature Award. Then there's the Israel Fishman Nonfiction Award, and then the Mike Morgan and Larry Roman's Children and Young Adult Literature Award.
And, okay, so let's just talk about some of the books.
Okay.
First of all, did you really read every single one of them?
If I didn't finish, I started and read most of all of them. There are honestly some books you read and you just can't get into, but you give it your best shot. And if they were suggested by someone else on the committee as a book to read, I'd pick it up and continue. But most of them I read. There were a couple that I just couldn't
So finish. How many people on the committee?
This year there were 11, I think.
Okay, so did everybody on the committee read all of the same books, or were you reading different books and recommending?
The publishers send us the same books, so we all get the same books. And it's kind of self-paced. You'll read a book that looks interesting to you, and as other committee members suggest it, you might move on to the next one. But everyone's supposed to do their best to read all of the books. I can't say whether everyone did. I think most people read most of them, but there are some you just can't get to. Or if you know, five members of the committee say this one isn't worth it because of XYZ, mm-hmm. some committee members just won't pick it up because they want to read something else.
Well, I would think if enough people just didn't really care for the book, it's not in contention to win.
And there are some books that isn't as a reader, not even on the word committee, you pick it up, it's just not going anywhere for you. You just kind of sometimes can tell.
And everybody votes on individual categories?
Yes. What happens is we read the books and then we narrow it down. And before we go to the American Library Association midwinter meeting in January, we come with a list of titles, and from those titles we select the winner and then the honor books.
So how many books out of 250 or so books, how many did you seriously consider during that?
Well, we come to midwinter with it with this year with 5 titles, but I think there were about 15 or 20 that were kind of at the top of the list
for each category.
Yeah.
For each category. So you're talking about 250 books, and you've narrowed it down to about 60.
Yeah.
And then from there, you're discussing and giving reasons. Now, did you have to reread anything just to say, "Oh, that wasn't on my list," and you went back to some of them?
I did. About November, December, when we start to narrow it down, I went back and reread the books that were on the 20 list to help me, you know, refresh my memory, because some of them I'd read in May and I couldn't really remember everything about, or I wanted to reread it because other people liked it and I didn't. I just wanted to refresh my memory.
And have a reason to say, "No, you idiot, that's a piece of garbage."
Yeah, or see if there's something I missed. You know, some people really liked some aspect of a book, and I hadn't recognized that. I went back, reread it, and said, "Oh, yeah, that's something I missed." So okay. It's helpful.
Okay.
Just the logistics of getting that many books read in that short amount of time, because that's not even a full year.
Right.
From May to November, what's that, 6 months?
Yeah, about that, yeah.
Yeah. So do you read some, like, multiple books at the same time?
I don't know what other people do. I have always read multiple books at the same time. I've never read just one book at a time, whether I have a book on my nightstand or a book.
He has two eyes.
But he has one brain.
Wow. Okay, so you're saying you're reading multiple at a time. How much time did you spend every day reading?
You know, probably 3 to 4 hours a day, minimum.
And on your days off?
I would spend most of the day reading. Yeah, at least 6 to 7.
And you've been dating who?
No one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That was my next question.
And no social life. I joked that when I was done with the committee, I said, I can actually read, you know, the books that I've seen come into the library that I've been setting aside on a list of what I wanted to read. Because you don't really have a whole lot of time for pleasure reading or TV watching or anything, because there's so many books. And I should say, honestly, the Art Book Award Committee is small. There are some other ones that the American Library Association has where they read 500-plus books. And that, I don't know how those people survive, because there's just so much to do.
Mm-hmm. And I bet they don't have, like you do, Laron, a 5-year-old.
Exactly. And a full-time job.
Yeah. Well, he has a full-time job,
yeah,
but he's in a library.
Yeah,
so. But I don't read during the day. People
right.
say, "Oh, librarians, you can sit and read." No, that's not.
That's not what your job.
No,
they're
no,
not
no.
paying you from the city to
no.
sit and read.
No.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the books. First, the literary award. Who won that one?
We gave it to a woman named Hilary Sloan. She wrote a book called Art on Fire, and it's published by a small press out of Ann Arbor, Michigan, called Bywater Books. And it is a fiction title, but it's a fictional biography of a artist. And she submitted this to, and I can't remember which award, but she submitted it and it won the nonfiction prize, even though it's a fictional title because it's so well written. But it's a story of a painter named Francesca Della Silva, and she, it's her life story. And, of course, the title kind of gives it away. Her art burns in the beginning of the book, and then you kind of have a flashback, and the story continues on. But interspersed in this, this story of her life with her sister and her family, which is pretty dramatic and interesting in itself, are these pieces of faux literary criticism that the writer has written. And they read just like something out of an art magazine, with footnotes and fake titles and quotations and descriptions of the art. It's really fascinating to read, and I liked it because you could kind of picture in your head what the art would look like, and I would be disappointed if someone were to take these descriptions and try and paint them, because then it would ruin the paintings.
It's one of those books that the movie would ruin it.
It would. It really would, because the art is such, it's so integral, but it's in your head. So if someone were to paint them, it would totally ruin the story, I think.
But you would like her to be that successful, since you've chosen her as your winner.
Yes, and it was a fantastic book. I hope she writes more. But
was this her first book?
I think it was her first. I believe, if I remember correctly, a journalist by trade, and she's done some other things. But I think this is her first piece of fiction.
I find that interesting, putting in all the literary criticism with all the footnotes. And
yeah, it's really fantastic. Uh-huh. It really is.
And what is the award? Just does it go with a cash prize? Or?
Sure. The award is a plaque, and for the winners, it's a $1,000 cash prize.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. And it's nice that somebody from a small press won it.
It is, yeah. And that's one of the nice things about the award is that we don't really look at the press. We look at the content of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple small presses that we honored this year, which was made me pretty happy.
Okay, so along with the winner, mm-hmm. you named some honorable mentions as well.
We named three in the literature category.
So talk a little bit about some of the other books.
Sure. Because it's literature, we cover the gamut. And one of the books that we selected is a play by John Moran's called A Strange and Separate People. And he previously was a honor winner a couple years ago for another play of his called The Temperamentals. But this play follows the story of Stuart, a newly Orthodox Jew, and he visits the home of Phyllis to have her cater a party. But I don't want to give the crux of the plot away, but her husband shows up, and he is a therapist who helps people who are gay be not gay. And as I think we've seen in some news stories in recent years, people who protest too much maybe have something to hide. And
Michelle Bachman's
Stuart
husband
doesn't really have a party to cater. He's just going to check out Phyllis's husband, and things ensue. But it's very well written. And the nice thing about this play is it, in this published version, it has some statements at the beginning and end from different Jewish organizations on homosexuality and their views on it. Mm-hmm. And it really is very enlightening.
Has the play been produced yet?
Yes, it was. It was produced, and then it was published.
Published.
It was a couple years ago. Some off Broadway. I can't remember where off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so what are the other books that
Sure, the other one is a short story collection by Benjamin Sines called Everything Begins and Ends at the Kentucky Club. And this collection of short stories won the Penn Faulkner Award. It was also in the Lambda Literary Award this year.
Hmm.
But Ben Sines is a author from Texas. He teaches at UT El Paso, and he is he writes a lot about the border and the juxtaposition between Texas and Mexico. And in this collection of short stories, everything takes or has a link to the Kentucky Club, which is an actual bar in Juarez. And so all the stories either have to do with that somehow. Some cross border, some take place solely in Texas, but maybe the people met at this bar and that sort of thing. But there's, I think, 10 or 11 short stories in here, all very well written. And his young adult novel last year, Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe, won our young adult literature award.
I was just going to say his name
year.
Was familiar, yeah. So.
Yeah, he won our young adult literature award last year, and then this year he was an honor winner, and he won the Penn Faulkner and the Lambda Literary.
Hmm.
And last year his Aristotle and Dante won the Pour au Belpré from the American Library Association. Was a Prinz Award winner, and was also a Lambda Literary Award winner as well. So he's had a good 2 years, but he's a fantastic writer and a fantastic person.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then there was a third book.
Yeah, the third one is called The Rebellion of Miss Lucy Ann Lobdell by William Klaber, and this is historical fiction. Lucy Ann Lobdell was a real person. She lived in New York, and at that time went to the frontier, which ended up being Minnesota or Wisconsin. But to survive, she dressed as a man and acted as a man because she could hunt and fish. And she became more comfortable that way and realized that she'd rather be a man. And she ends up falling in love and having a daughter and some other things. So some of the facts of her life are unknown, and they've been filled in by the author. And some are well known, and uses newspaper clippings and some contemporary accounts to discuss her life. It kind of is a tragic story. It doesn't end on a happy note, but it's well written, and it really I think discusses well some of the historic challenges that lesbians and trans people experienced early on in the 18th century that we don't really talk about or know much about.
What kind of research did she do for this? Do you even know?
He came across some research that someone else had done who was going to write something, but then wasn't able to, and he passed it on to him because he's a journalist, and he was so fascinated that he just wrote this. But old newspaper clippings, historical accounts from historical societies, and that sort of thing.
Once these books win your award, or like, what's his name, the one who, from El Paso?
Benjamin Sines.
When somebody wins your award, starts winning multiple awards like this, does that affect sales? Does it really help that author?
I think it does. I think there are obviously some awards that people recognize more than others. Mm-hmm. But any time a book has a seal or a sticker on it, that people see that, and that piques their curiosity, and they want to see and read that. Mm-hmm. I don't have any figures, but I do think that winning an award does indeed help help a book sale.
You know, there's a limited number of books that the Dallas Public Library can acquire, but I would think you'd be very conscious of the Stonewall Awards and the other ALA awards.
Yeah, I think the library tries to purchase, if not one, two or three or four copies of all the books that have been recognized by the ALA and other book awards too. Mm-hmm. Those are the books that people want to read, that people will hear about, that they're interested, and we want to provide those to the community so that we have those. And if they've been recognized, that means they have some sort of merit that we should, as a library, have and share with the community.
The library has been increasing its gay collection. We'll get to the other awards right after our break, but the library has been increasing its gay and lesbian transgender collection tremendously. It's not just in Oak Lawn anymore, is it?
No. We've had the collection Oak Lawn for a number of years. But North Oak Cliff, the branch at North Oak Cliff, has a burgeoning collection. The manager there, Ray, has done a good job of collecting some titles, and it's been very popular, he said. He's had people come in, especially young people come in, and one day a young boy came in, and then the next day he brought a friend, and then another friend. And it's quite popular, and we're hoping to grow that collection as well.
Good. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Oh, wait, she's not here yet. And Laurent Landis. We'll be back with more with our guest, Peter Coyle, who's the branch manager from Audelia, the Audelia Public Library here in Dallas, in just a minute.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for the 2014 appearance of Igor and the Red Elvises? It's the biggest Russian rock and roll party of the year, Friday, May 2nd, when Igor and the Red Elvises come to the Sons of Herman Hall. It will be a night of gold medal, rock and roll fun, and dancing madness, and your only chance to see them in Dallas in 2014. Bear witness and join the happy masses shaking it to the rhythm. Get your tickets now at KNON.org. Bill's Records, or Forever Young in Grand Prairie. Don't miss this, or you'll spend the rest of the year trying to make up for lost fun. Igor and the Red Elvises at the Sons of Herman Hall in Dallas, Friday, May 2nd. Doors open at 7 p.m. for a free dinner while it lasts. The Red Elvises playing two sets, all Red Elvises, all night long. For more information, KNON.org. This is a KNON benefit event.
Hi, I'm Cleve Jones, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis. We're talking to Peter Coyle. He was on the Stonewall Literary Awards Committee. He was the chairman of it this year. It's a national committee. But he's one of our local librarians, and he's at the Audelia branch, which is open Tuesday through Saturday.
Correct.
If you have a question on one of these books that you're hearing about, you want to talk to somebody who's done a lot of reading.
A lot.
Peter's there during the week and happy to talk to you and make recommendations. And that's really why he's here today. Books is not something that we talk about a lot, except when we have a particular author on. And this is, I think, the first time we've ever had anybody on to just talk about a whole bunch of books.
From the other side, most of these books that you've mentioned sounds like it were submitted from agents, or not agents, but from small or large publishers. Can someone submit a book who doesn't have a publisher?
Yeah, we actually have a number of people who contact us who maybe have a self-published title that they'd like to submit. And they can do that. They just need to send an email. There's an online form on the website that they can put on the information. But they have to be willing to send copies to the committee so the committee can read it.
Mm-hmm.
Just because a book is submitted doesn't mean that it will be considered or move forward. But we're willing to take a look at the idea of looking at the book if they're willing to send the information to us.
Sure. Okay, let's take another one of the awards. Let's jump to children's and young adult.
Sure.
The reason I want to do that is because that's Laurent's reading level. Well, it's what you're usually reading.
That is what I'm
reading. Laurent has a 5-year-old.
Yes.
First of all, who was the winner in that category?
Well, this year we had a tie. So we had two winners, which is something that has never happened before, and it probably will not happen again for a couple of reasons. But the logistics of it aren't necessary to talk about, but we had a tie. And one was a book called Beautiful Music for Ugly Children by Kirsten Cron Mills. And this was a book that was published late last year. And it's the story of Gabe, who has a local community radio program, actually.
Sounds like a good book that you need to get.
I'm just kind of like taken back by the title.
Well, it's it has to do with, I guess there's a song or something about beautiful music for ugly children. It plays into the plot. But he has a neighbor who gets him this gig, and his neighbor's a pretty well-respected retired DJ. But Gabe gets a following of his radio program, and they call themselves the Ugly Children because of the name of his radio program. But Gabe is a trans person, and he is concerned that his radio program will find out that at school he doesn't go by Gabe and he doesn't present as Gabe because his family isn't accepting. He's afraid of what that will do to his burgeoning career because he has big dreams of being a disc jockey. There's, of course, it's a young adult novel, so of course lots of drama ensues because that's all young adult novels are full of drama and angst and even more drama. But it really is a beautiful novel, and there's a lot of musical references in it. So if you're not into music, it can get a little clunky, but you can skim past it and still enjoy the plot. And maybe some of the songs will interest people and they'll listen to them. But Kirsten Cron Mills does a good job in the end of the book of having a nice afterword and explanation of trans issues, and she's done her research very well. I've been told that by a number of people in the trans community. And I'll just tell a story if I can. We called to tell her that she won the award, and she was absolutely flattered, and she kind of cried because she was very grateful that not that her book had been recognized, but that librarians had recognized it herself. So as an author, she said that meant more to her than most anything. So just because she's a nice, delightful person, I think people should read her book. And it's a great book, too. And the second book we honor is a book called Fat Angie by E.E. Charlton Trujillo, who is a Texas, which isn't Texas anymore, but she's from Texas. But her story is about a girl named Angie, but everyone calls her Fat Angie. And she, in fact, calls herself Fat Angie in the book. And every time
I understand that. It's like we call Laurent Fat Laurent.
Well, it really plays a pivotal role in the story because her self-esteem is at issue in her, and her sister's away at war and then goes missing in action and she has this nervous breakdown, but then she meets this girl KC who just moves into town and doesn't call her Fat Angie, doesn't see her as being this person that no one wants to be around, and then she kind of shocks everyone by trying out for the basketball team because, she's, quote, Fat Angie, and who is she to be playing sports? But it really is a very well-written novel. It's really touching. It made me cry both times that I read it, and in different spots, too. And in fact, the author, Eunice, she goes by E.E. In print. Her name's Eunice. She did a tour this last year where she went around, and she's a filmmaker by trade, working with at-risk youth. She published this book and then went around and tried to do writing workshops with these at-risk youth and talk to them. And then she went back a couple months later, and has this film in post-production, and she's hoping to get it produced and submitted to some literary or some film festivals this next year. But she's really involved in trying to help these children who are at risk or feel low. And that really is the point of her book, is that children and young adults have all these external pressures. They already feel all this horrible, you know, stuff from what people say to them, that they sometimes just need to be lifted up. And that's the story of her novel.
And by the way, our calling Laurent Fat Laurent is just gratuitous. It's no reason for it at all. Last year's winner in this category was Leslea Newman.
She was an honor book.
She was an honor book, yeah. Right. And Leslea was here. She's been on our show. She was here a few weeks ago reading from her book. Is that common that these authors will then do some kind of a tour with their books?
Most of the time when an author publishes a book, they'll do a tour either to coincide with the publication of it, or once it's published, they'll do lots of school visits, mm-hmm. especially the children and young adult authors. They often will do school visits at either the behest of the publisher, or schools will contact them, or they'll appear at different book festivals and things like that.
Including the gay and lesbian books?
I think so. I know that
there are lots of GSAs out there, gay straight alliances in the schools. I spoke at one a couple of months ago. They have more than 100 members from one high school here. There are lots of kids that we're talking about.
Yeah, if they can get the authors don't speak for free usually. They have to have some compensation, or at least someone to pay for them to come. So if the schools are willing and able to pay for that, I'm sure they would do mm-hmm. that.
And it was the library that brought Leslea in.
The library, in conjunction with the Friends of the Dallas Public Library, mm-hmm. the Friends of the Dallas Public Library funded her to come to Dallas to do that.
Yeah.
Just in general, what do you all look for is the panel for when you pick your winners? I mean, obviously a good book, but it's got to be something more than just a good book.
Yeah, I think everyone looks for different things. I look for a book that's well written, that has a good storyline, something that I read and I just want to say, I just wanted to share it with someone right away. It's that good. For me, it's not so much of an emotional reaction to the book, but I have to really believe in the book and really feel that the story is something that needs to be told. Mm-hmm. Hmm. And I think there are other people, we discuss it. Some people say, that book's not gay enough, or it doesn't have enough of this or enough of that. But reading is one of those things that is different for everybody. Everybody's looking for something different. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking for a book that's well written and has some sort of maybe an emotional kick to it, maybe. I'm not sure if that's the right word or not. But.
So the tie for the young adult and children's literature, they were both young adult books.
That's correct.
Were there other honorable mentions in that category?
Yeah, we had three. And the young adult and children's category is interesting because there are more things published in the young adult side that have GLBT themes than children's. There are very few picture books and very few what we would call elementary and middle grade novels.
Leslea's books really are an exception.
Yeah, she had two picture books a couple years ago, and those were picture books. Her other book is a young adult. It's poetry, so those are different things. But yeah, not a lot of picture books, and part of that is demand. Part of that's I talk to publishers, and they just don't get a lot of submissions that are things that they can publish, either in terms of quality of writing or artwork. So I think there's a delicate balance that has to be met. There's a demand, but there's no one really there to fill the demand. So we need to get good authors and good illustrators writing more of these these books.
Just while we're talking about Leslie, my favorite book of hers. Now, yours, your favorite book of hers is Donovan's Big Day.
Donovan's Big Day.
Which is about?
It's about a little boy who's excited to walk his mommies down the aisle, who's getting married.
My favorite book of hers is A Fire Truck for Ruthie. What I love about that book is the backstory. When Leslie was growing up, she thought dolls were creepy.
She still does.
And she still does, yes, she still does. Like, but any doll she had, she'd just rip its head off because she just couldn't, she could not stand these dolls. And instead, she wanted a fire truck. And that's the story of A Fire Truck for Ruthie.
Right.
But so I love that about her, because she doesn't seem like the kind of person who would rip the head off of a, a doll. She's really a very nice person.
She is delightful, and yeah, it's hard to picture popping the head off the doll.
Yeah, but they're creepy, so yeah. She needed to, you know, more like the Twilight Zone children's author there, in a way. That's why that's my favorite one. What were the honorable mentions in that category?
Sure. The first one was a book called Better Nate Than Ever by Tim Federle. And this was a middle grade book, so it's meant for, when you say middle grade, that's, you know, third, maybe fourth, fifth, sixth, it's the upper elementary, not quite middle school, but it's a story of, it's a fictional story, but Tim drew from his personal experience. He lived in a small town in Pennsylvania, he wanted to go to New York and be in Broadway, so in this novel, Nate runs away from his hometown with the help of his best friend while his parents are on vacation. He gets on a Greyhound bus and goes to New York to audition for E.T., the Broadway musical. And in doing so, he encounters the big city, New York, has to try and lie his way into an audition because he's a minor, doesn't have a parent with him, and goes through all the machinations of what you have to do to audition for a Broadway musical. And it's filled with all these funny things. Instead of swearing, he and his best friend use the titles of Broadway flops. And I'm not a Broadway person, but it, even though it's funny, because instead of saying a swear word, there's a title of some Broadway musical thrown in there, and it's pretty funny. And Tim is a talented writer. He's a funny man. Even his emails are hilarious. You can follow him on Twitter, and his tweets are very funny as well. And the sequel for this just came out. It's called 5678. So Better Nate Than Ever has him auditioning, and then 567 Nate picks up right where the other one left off. And this book doesn't overtly have any GLBT themes. Nate says in it, and towards the beginning, you know, don't label me, I'm just 12, I don't know really what I am. But in 5678, there may be a little bit more expository writing about that. He may or may not get his first kiss. I won't give the plot away. So that was that. The other one was a nonfiction title by Ken Setterington called Branded by the Pink Triangle. And this is a book that deals with the history of homosexuals during Nazi rule in World War II. And so it's a nonfiction title meant for people who are researching it, needing some information for a paper, or even just a history that is easily read for kids who are in, you know, maybe 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade. It's good for a school collection on the World War II unit. You can have this book that talks about something that's not talked a lot about. This is pictures from different museums around the world, a lot from the Holocaust Museum in D.C.
Well, they're the ones who did the research on it. We brought that exhibit in a few years ago to the Holocaust Museum here, yeah, and brought in the actual researcher who put that together. But there had been so little research on what had gone on because it was considered such a shame at,
yeah,
the time when others were released from the prison camps or from the concentration camps. The gays who were incarcerated in the concentration camps were then rearrested and had to serve out their terms. And all this was just research that was done recently, like as late as the 90s and early 2000s, to even come up with what happened. So that book has to be a first.
I think it is.
As far as being written for young adults.
Yeah, and he's done a good job. He has a couple personal narratives in there, so you can follow the story of a real person, and mm-hmm. that really, really hits home. And he did a really, really good job. And then I think it's something that even adults should read. I mm-hmm. really do. Yeah.
Okay, so those were the honorable mentions. And the winners. Oh, there's one more. There's one more. Okay, go ahead with that one, and then I'll ask my question.
This is the last one is, and these are alphabetical, so there's no mm-hmm. ranking there. David Levithan, who's well known for his first book 10 years ago, Boy Meets Boy. This is a book called Two Boys Kissing. And I actually did a panel with him at the Texas Library Association conference this last week, and David says that his desire was to write kind of a book 10 years later after his first, and it's based on something that really happened: two boys who tried to beat the world record, the Guinness Book of World Records, for the longest kiss, mm-hmm. And so this story is a fictional story of that, plus some other characters interspersed. A young boy who leaves home because his parents aren't accepting. There's a trans character who's trying to get a date and some other things. But the crux of this and the really beautiful part of this is that it's narrated by a chorus of deceased gay men who died in the 80s of AIDS. And so this chorus is narrating and kind of cheering these characters on, but they can't hear them. And it really lends itself to a sense of gravitas to the story, because a lot of, I think, young people today don't have a sense of history of what it was like to live 20, 30 years ago. It's much easier, I think, in some respects for them. And that history isn't taught, so they don't know that 30 years ago there was this plague that was rampaging the community. And so this chorus of gay men talking to these young people really is a juxtaposition, which is, it's really powerful.
Why don't we take our break, and we'll continue talking. We're talking to Peter Coyle. He's the branch manager of the Audelia branch of the Dallas Public Library. He was the chairperson of the Stonewall Literary Awards, which is an award given by the American Library Association. And we'll be back with Peter. I'm Dave Taffet, here with Laurent Landis right after this.
KNON and Lone Star Dead Radio present a live performance by David Gans Friday, May 2nd at Poor David's Pub. David Gans has spent years documenting, archiving, writing about, and sharing the world of the Grateful Dead, and is an accomplished musician and performer in his own right. Come be a member of the audience on the air at this premier benefit event. Kalachandis in Dallas will be providing a free vegetarian dinner included with admission. Come join us Friday night, May 2nd at Poor David's Pub. Poor David's Pub is located at 1313 South Lamar in Dallas. Doors open at 7. Tickets available at KNON.org, Bill's Records, and Groovy Goods in Arlington. That's a live broadcast, fantastic food from Kalachandis, and a live performance for his first ever show in the state of Texas, a man who has done so much for deadheads everywhere, our very own David Gans. This is a KNON Lone Star Dead benefit event.
Hi, this is Patty Fink, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis. So Patty still hasn't gotten here yet.
No, not
That's
yet.
That's where she gets her name from. I think she'll be here next week.
I think she'll be here.
We're talking to Peter Coyle. He's the branch manager of the Audelia branch of the Dallas Public Library, and the chairperson of the Stonewall Literary Awards that were given earlier this year. What I was going to ask you, and I don't need specific names of books, but were there books that you were a little bit disappointed weren't given at least an honorable mention? Or?
I think everyone on the committee had at least one or two that they were like, oh, darn, that didn't get on. Mm-hmm. I think there were. I think for me, I was happy with the books we selected. I think we picked some great books. There were a couple of nonfiction that I wish would have made it. But in terms of the literature ones, I was very, very happy, and I'm still happy with the nonfiction. But there's one or two that I think.
And we're pretty much was the committee pretty much in agreement on all of these books from the beginning? Like, was there anybody on the committee who was just, oh, I can't believe you picked that piece of garbage, or I can't believe you're not choosing this one?
Well, I think there's one or two. There were a couple that some people really, really loved, and no one else liked at all. So it's really interesting to see different people, you know, librarians especially, their opinions on these, because you have 10 people that really hate a book, and one person's just like, this, there's get the award, and we all look at them and say, what are you talking about? That's, that was horrible. So,
okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about, we can come back to the awards. Let's talk about where you work.
Okay.
The Dallas Library, and talk about the LGBTQ section, if there is one. We all know about the Oak Lawn Branch Library, and you know, that's kind of our go for the Dallas gay lesbian community.
And now the North Oak Cliff Branch.
North Oak Cliff Branch has kind of been our go-to place if we wanted to check out books, some gay and lesbian-themed books. Those have been our go-to places. But other branches, including your branch, now that we're learning, have gay and lesbian books and or sections. So is there a section, or is it just kind of interspersed with other books?
Yeah, at both the Oak Lawn and the North Oak Cliff branch, there are specific sections, and they're labeled. But the rest of the branches, there aren't specific sections. You might find these books in the fiction section, in the nonfiction section, the children, young adult. They're not labeled. They're there as a book that someone can read.
But anything that's in the Dallas stacks anywhere, you can request from your
correct
local branch, and
yeah,
they'll have it the next day or so.
Well, they're
next couple of days.
Yeah, usually 5 to 7 days with deliveries. But even if it's
that's
something,
because it's one of the outer branches. Oak Lawn's right in the middle. They have it the next day.
But you know, if it's a book that only Oak Lawn has, you can request it and have it sent to any branch. Or if it's something that other branches have, you know, we can get it for you. There's no reason that you should not request a book. You know, it'll be there in a couple of days, and we can get it for you.
And whose decision is it? I guess it would be like a branch manager's decision to have an actual section, as opposed to just mixing it in.
Not a branch decision. That's a decision, kind of as a library system. We talked about expanding the Oak Lawn section because we saw that there was a need in North Oak Cliff. There was more of a community growing there, and so we decided to start a collection there. And there are certain collections at those two locations, because that's where there's kind of a demand and a core group. If there are other parts of the city that start growing and there's more demand, there may be a collection there, but probably these two for now.
You know, when my daughter was born, David got me a handful of children's books, and I just adore them. And one of them, my favorites, is a book that makes the most banned books list every year.
Entangle.
And it's called Entangle Mix 3. It's the most innocuous book ever. It's the cutest little book.
About penguins.
About penguins.
Dangerous.
And the only thing, there are 2 pages in there where the zookeeper says something, oh, they must be in love. If you take those 2 pages out, the book is, there's no one would have any objection to the book at all.
Yeah, I mean, but even that's really naughty. But so,
you don't want to teach children about love.
You don't want to teach children about love. So I've read that, you know, I don't know if Dallas has or hasn't, but I've read, because that book has made the most banned books list repeatedly, that some branches of libraries in, you know, various places in the country, some libraries have removed it. Is Dallas one of them?
I don't believe so. I believe we have copies of that. And we have a request for reconsideration policy. Mm-hmm. So if someone, say a reader says, I don't think this book or DVD or music CD or anything should be in the library, there's a form they can fill out. They can explain their objection. They can explain their reasoning. Then it goes to a committee of administrators and librarians who go through, and they'll look at the book. They'll read it. They'll read the reviews, and they'll see if the complaints are ones that are, I don't want to use the term valid, but see if the complaint is something that is that they agree with or not, based on all the facts, and they make a decision.
Now, in Dallas, wouldn't it be more likely that the book that's going to be banned is the one by some right-wing extremist from the Family Research Council rather than an innocuous book about penguins?
I don't know about that. I just know that we try and have materials for everybody, mm-hmm. for every opinion, every idea. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be stuff in the library that you're going to object to, but there's going to be stuff that your neighbor's going to object to that you're not. Everyone has different tastes. And we serve the community, and right. That in all of its shapes and forms.
So we're not having book burnings here.
We are not.
That's good to know.
Librarians don't go into the job of being librarians to take books out of the hands of people. We get into that job to give books to people,
right.
And we're going to do our best to make sure that everyone can get what they need when they need it, and that's our job.
I do want to go through that last category of awards. It's the nonfiction category. Who won that one?
Sure. This was also a tie. And it was between two books. The first one is called American Honor Killings, Desire and Rage Among Men by David McConnell. And he kind of uses the term American Honor Killings in place of gay panic defense. And he frames it in that way and discusses a number of cases in American history in the last 20 years where people have been killed for either being gay or being perceived to be gay or trans or those sorts of legal cases where someone says, well, I didn't know and this happened and I panicked. Well, he talks about those and frames it in kind of an honor killing type mentality. And I think that's kind of a – I don't want to use the word shtick, but it really is just talking about gay panic, and I think it's in doing it in a way so that people will find it more accessible. And the second one was a book called Raising My Rainbow, Adventures in Raising a Fabulous Ginger Creative Son by Lori Duren. And she has a blog called Raising My Rainbow, and it's something she started years ago when her youngest son started to be gender nonconforming. He likes pink things. He likes Barbies. He likes things that traditionally we say are girl things. And so she started blogging about, what do I do with my son? He's going to start kindergarten in school, and I can't let him go to school with a pink backpack with My Little Pony on it, can I? And she blogs about this and the support she received from her family and her friends and how the teachers have been supportive. And she's taken a lot of these blogs and put it in this book, and it's fabulous. I discovered the blog before her book came out, and I stayed up till like 2 in the morning reading her blog because it's so fascinating. And then when the book came out, I was really excited to read it, and it's superb.
So is it kind of an advice book?
No, it really is more of just – it's a memoir. This is what I've done. And so I think there is maybe some advice in it, but it really is – this is what worked for me and my family. And I think you can apply those to some other
things. What are some of the things that worked for her?
She and her husband decided that they wanted their son to be happy, and so – they let him wear the pink tutu and paint his toenails, and they were hesitant to let him go to school, with this. And there were some times, she says, where her son came to her and said, I don't think I should do that because the kids will make fun of me. Mm-hmm. But then there were other days where he said, I want to do this because that's what I want to do. So I think if anything, it's the advice is do what you think is best for your family, but do what you think is going to make your child happy. And so far, it seems to be working for them.
Does that work for you?
Haven't hit that issue yet.
But it is what you do.
It is.
You
what
want
I do.
Your kid happy.
I want my kid to be happy.
Yeah. Who were some of the honorable mentions?
Yeah, we had two. One was a book called A Little Gay History, and it was a book written by R.B. Parkinson for an exhibit at the British Museum, and he was a curator there. And this book is it's a little book, and it has pictures and artifacts with descriptions of same-sex relationships throughout history, from every kind, from Greek pottery to playing cards to political buttons to Japanese paintings from the 14th century, poems that were written in the Middle East that were erotic love poetry. And it's a really small book. It's pretty accessible for, I think, anybody. If you're looking for just a quick something to skim through, there's some really, really cool things. It appeals to the art person, the history person, and just, I think, to the general reader as well. And then the last honor book was a book called Fairyland, A Memoir of My Father by Alyssa Abbott. And she grew up in San Francisco with her father in the 70s. Her father divorced her mother and they moved across country to San Francisco. And she grew up right in Castro with her father, who was a poet. And so she knew all these people. And she didn't really realize that her life was any different. And she eventually comes back and takes care of her father, who passes away in the 80s from AIDS. But it's really an interesting portrait of San Francisco during this time, from a young child being raised by a gay man, and it's touching. And I think it's a chapter of the history that isn't really told, but she tells it very well and from a very unique perspective.
And what's interesting about all of these books that you talked about today is that they're all really different. There's not a preponderance of AIDS books, but they're there. It's not a preponderance of
trans books,
trans or gay or lesbian. But it's all there. They're just all different. Is that something that you specifically were looking for? Like if it was between a couple of books, okay, this is not represented.
It's really not. Yeah. We try and. Our mandate is to pick books of exceptional merit relating to the GLBT experience. Some years there's no T, some years there's no B, some years there's more G than L, other years there's only one L. You know, and it's just how it works. We try and pick what we think are the best books. And sometimes I think people get upset that there's something not represented or, well, this was the only book on X subject published. It should have been recognized because of this. But that's not what we do. We can't try and fit every letter in. We do what we can to pick what we think mm-hmm. are the best books.
There was a play. There's a short story book.
There's a couple of memoirs. Yeah.
A couple of memoirs. I mean, really, a broad spectrum there. But obviously everything can't be included.
Yeah, there can't. And we have – the Library Association does some book lists, and they're not awards, but we have the Rainbow Book List, which is a bibliography of children and young adult titles. So a lot of the titles that you were wondering, well, why wasn't this recognized, it might be on that list. Mm-hmm. And we have another called Over the Rainbow, which is for adult literature, nonfiction. So we do have mm-hmm. a wide variety of resources to find other GLPT stuff from the year.
Okay.
All right, so we're in a new year. Have submissions already started for the next?
They are. I'm not on the committee. My term ended, but they have begun. They formed the committee, and they have begun requesting and reviewing for the books for January.
Okay. What I was going to ask you was, obviously you couldn't include everything, but if you could include a few more books or just some other books that just stuck with you. Maybe they weren't award winners, but what are some books that just stuck with you?
Yeah, last year Hannah Moskowitz was an honor winner for her book Gone, Gone, Gone. And she wrote a book this year called Marco Impossible. And I really thought it was just a cute book. It has to do with a boy who has to break into his high school prom to confess his undying love for this British student who's going to be going back to England. It's really funny, kind of quirky. It's this adventure kind of story. I really liked that one. There were a couple nonfiction titles that discussed some aspects. One was called I can remember the title. I think it was called Butch Queen's Up in Pumps. And it was a treatment of the ballroom dance scene in African-American, I think specifically Detroit, but also Los Angeles. It was fantastic. It was so illuminating. It was something that I didn't have any clue existed. Mm-hmm. But those were two that really stuck with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in every book, just because they didn't win an award, there are lots of books out there. Do you have anything to recommend for Gabrielle, for Laurent's daughter?
How old is she?
She's five.
What does she like to read?
Anything that's glitzy.
Glitzy. She probably would like, these aren't gay, but she'd probably like Pinkalicious, which I'm sure, are you aware of those?
No, but it sounds like something okay. She would
whole
like.
Series, if she's a girly girl, mm-hmm. she'll love Pinkalicious. I also love Mo Willems. Anything by Mo Willems. He has a series of readers called Elephant and Piggy, I think is, but they're hilarious. And those are the two that, off the top of my head, mm-hmm. that I think are great. But sure, Pinkalicious.
Great.
Okay.
And we'll get them. You said that now that you don't have to read this specific set of books, you've been making this list for yourself.
Yes.
Things that you want to read. What are some things that you're going to start reading?
Well, I just read actually a book on Scientology, which was really interesting. It's a memoir of the niece of the head of Scientology. She left, and she's kind of written an expose. It was very fascinating to read this about the inner workings of that. And there are a couple of fiction titles that I'm waiting for. Hmm. Just kind of the bestsellers from the last year that I haven't been able to read.
Mm-hmm.
Those sorts of things.
Yeah. So what are you doing with your time now?
I'm catching up on some TV that I haven't been able to watch, and reading for fun. That's what I'm doing.
Well, great.
Good. Thank you so much for coming on.
And so you can go to the Dallas Public Library. We have 28 locations in the city, 2 bookmobiles, and we're open usually Tuesday through Saturday. You can go to dallaslibrary.org for hours and location. And if you live in the city of Dallas, just bring your photo ID with a Dallas address, and you can get a library card to check out books from any library in the city.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. Peter, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
That brings us to the end of another Lambda Weekly. And next week, I forgot who our guest is.
I forgot who it is.
I know we have a guest for next week.
Find us on Facebook. We'll update you.
Right. And have a happy Easter for those who will not be with us next week.